Everyone's fine. Yeah, some smile, some... Sorry, it's a rainy, cold day. It's just... It is just rainy, cold day. The next few days. That's right. Believing even in darkness. So this is the topic tonight. So a couple of quick recaps from last week. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but last week's topic was choosing joy and adopting heaven's value system. And we talked about a couple of things. Remember the bucket? And a lot of times we just like, you know what, I just don't have time to read, or I can't make time to read the Bible. But that's how we learn heaven's value system, is being in the Word, being close to God. And even if your bucket has a lot of holes in it, you can't remember anything, at the end of the day, you're going to have what? A clean bucket. That's right. When Ezra, when they found the Torah, and he stood before the Israelites and he read, what did the people do? What was their reaction? They wept. They were so moved. And probably a lot of that has to do with what had happened the last 70 years. You know, there was history there. They were finally back to their home. Some of them had, well, probably most of them had never even been there. They'd only heard about it, being back in Jerusalem. And they'd rebuild the walls. They were getting to establish the temple. And they stood all day and read from God's word. And the people wept. And what did God tell them? You go home, you eat the fatted calf, and you rejoice. For your strength is where? All right. Your strength is in God. The joy of the Lord is my strength. We talked about as cows chew the cud, you know, sometimes not an Eastern philosophical meditation, but just being in the Word, talking about a passage and just ruminating on that, and whether that's on your own or with others. You know, how do we do that? And we talked about different techniques, whether it's journaling or some type of email group or index cards, whatever works for you. Finding some ways to encourage yourself to ruminate on the Word. Right? Maybe it's a time of day you need to find. And we talked about meditating on these five characteristics. God's worth is incomparable. His Word is reliable. His works are all inspiring. His ways are loving. And God's will is good. And this is the value system of heaven. And that's what we talked about last week. And really thinking about how do we meditate on that. Because that, the joy of the Lord, is our strength. But if you don't know the Lord, if you don't know the Lord, then you don't have that in your toolbox. The joy of the Lord will be my strength. Nehemiah 8:10. We're going to come back to this because I probably don't have time to show this tonight, so I'm going to skip past this slide. All right, so tonight's topic, believing even in darkness, finding joy despite life's circumstances. Believing even in darkness. So there are four things I want to cover tonight, four topics. And let me give this aside. I completely hijacked this from Tim Keller, so... He had a sermon on this topic. If you're familiar with him, I make no bones about it. I give him all the credit for most everything I'm about to say tonight. So if you don't know Tim Keller, then hey, you can think I'm that good, but I'm not. Darkness can last a long time. There's no better place to learn about God's grace than when you're in the dark. There's no better place to become a stronger person than coming out of a dark place. And darkness is relative. Even if it lasts for many years, it's still relative. Those are the four things I want to talk about. Well, if you do not... Completely agree. We have this on our kitchen wall at the house. It's purposely skewed for the artistic purposes that you can't really read all of it. but simply says we tend to seek happiness when happiness is actually a choice. And that's true. Joy, happiness, however you want to define it, it is our choice. We tell our kids this all the time. They come in and they're just upset and they can't believe something happened, and we say, this is your choice. You are choosing to allow outside forces to dictate how you feel. Right? Now, I'm not discounting that there are forces in play that are overwhelming, as Carrie was mentioning. But it is a choice. It is a choice. So what are some dark moments? Give that some thought. Here are a couple of examples that I came up with, so you ruminate on that for just a minute. I'm going to go a little deeper. This is one of those that, unfortunately, when we leave tonight, we may not feel all right, right? We're going to talk about dark places and being in dark places, and it's not a feel-good, joyous, leave with happy smiles. But we need some tools in our toolbox on how to handle these. War. Well, certainly very top of the list. If you've ever seen any war movies, had someone in your family that was in a war, these certainly, just the worst of mankind comes out in war. Just a primal survival, how wars start, how they continue, and just the nature of mankind. Most of us have never, that's right. I have never, and hopefully will never. Very distant. Certainly, death would be at the top of that. Certainly, untimely deaths, right? We've had several here within our family, untimely deaths. Financial ruin. Relationship failures. Some of the most devastating. Physical diseases, lifelong diseases, being caretakers for those with diseases. Certainly some dark places. I was thinking of some others. Abuse. You know, it could be a spousal abuse. It could be just some type of relationship. It could be an abuse of worker to a boss type of situation, abuse that we get from others, abuse that we see in others. We see how others are abused, you know, whether it's sex trafficking, we see the gross abuses there, or someone is abusing us. James, did you have some? Tim? Yeah, I didn't put that one up there. Yeah. Addictions. Certainly those are really dark places, because those are inward and outward, right? You've got the physical need for that. I mean, that is a physical thing that your body has to have, right? It's a chemical thing. We could be codependency on other people. It could be pornography. It could be substance addictions. That's right. Careers. Maybe your career didn't turn out the way you wanted. Failed goals, you know, persecutions, and on and on. All right, so let's go a little deeper. I'm not asking for volunteers, but I want you to spend a moment. What is your darkness? And maybe your darkest place hasn't come yet. I don't know the answer to that. God does. But what is your darkness? Turn to Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1, verses 78 and 79. Because of the tender mercy of our God, with which the sunrise from on high will visit us to shine upon those who sit in darkness and the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. So at least we do have some assurance that in those dark times, for those who believe, there is someone, there is a power, there is a being outside the scope of us here, outside the scope of our universe, that will shine upon us eventually. We're not told how long, oftentimes. We don't know how long, oftentimes. James? There's so much comfort that can come from someone who has been through something, consoling someone who's currently in it. Now, no two situations are the same, obviously, but thank you for sharing that. In order for us to appreciate light, we need darkness, right? Our kids, every morning, they come down. It's so funny. It's usually Anderson at 5:30, 6 o'clock. He comes down in the office, studying, reading, doing the work. And as soon as he walks in the office, what do you think? It's 6 o'clock in the morning. It's dark outside. It's dark upstairs. It's dark coming down the stairway. He comes into the office. What do you think the first reaction he has? Right? He's been in darkness the last 8 hours, and he suddenly comes into the light. And so Megan and I are turning off the lights, getting it down to a but you need darkness in order for the light to be appreciated, right? Now, I'm not saying, and I may repeat this several times, I'm not saying that we all need to go through something really bad for us to appreciate God. But for those who have gone through something really bad, you even more appreciate the light, right? When Megan and I are sitting in the office, we don't really think about the light, but that's the first thing that Anderson's going to think of. And we've all experienced that, and how your eyes take a while to adjust to that. So in order for us to appreciate the light, sometimes darkness is needed. All right, we're going to spend most of our time in Psalm 88. So go ahead and turn over there. Psalm 88. While you're saying that, it makes me think of a couple of things. One, the Israelites, when they were weeping and crying, maybe it was remorse over how they had acted or how their ancestors had acted. And I kind of see that in our culture today. If we're not bothered, if we're not, and I'm not saying that we're at a worse time in history than we've ever been in history. Things have always been bad to different extents. But if we're not bothered by the things in the world, then we probably need to do some self-reflection. Yeah, that's a great point. The majority of the Psalms end very, very well, right? It's been some tough times, especially a lot of the ones that David had. Saul keeps chasing me around and tries to kill me, but thank goodness I'm okay and I'm going to be okay. And most of the Psalms are kind of that way, but there are two in particular that we're going to talk about tonight, and Psalm 88 in particular, that it doesn't end that way. And if you've never read it or have maybe read past it, this may be somewhat of a surprise. Let's read it and get the context for the rest of tonight. Psalm 88. O Lord, the God of my salvation, I have cried out by day and in the night before you. Let my prayer come before you. Incline your ear to my cry. For my soul has had enough troubles, and my life has drawn near to Sheol. I am reckoned among those who go down to the pit. I have become like a man without strength, forsaken among the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, and they are cut off from your hand. You have put me in the lowest pit, in the dark places, in the depths. Your wrath has rested upon me, and you have afflicted me with all your ways. You have removed my acquaintances far from me. You have made me an object of loathing to them. I am shut up and cannot go out. My eye has wasted away because of affliction. I have called upon you every day, O Lord. I have spread out my hands to you. Will you perform wonders for the dead? Will the departed spirits rise up and praise you? Will your loving kindness be declared in the grave, your faithfulness in Abaddon? Will your wonders be made known in the darkness and your righteousness in the land of forgetfulness? But I, O Lord, have cried out to you for help, and in the morning my prayer comes before you. Lord, why do you reject my soul? Why do you hide your face from me? I was afflicted and about to die from my youth on. I suffer your terrors. I am overcome. Your burning anger has passed over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. They have surrounded me like water all day long. They have encompassed me altogether. You have removed lover and friend far from me. My acquaintances are in darkness. That's how it ends. He's in a bad place. Think about this. Why is this in the Bible? Well, this one wasn't written by David, but that's okay. Same principle applies. Yeah. That's what he's sounding like, isn't it? Yeah. And we're going to circle back to that because that's an interesting point. It's very. Ken, did you have a comment? I will from here on out. How about that? Okay, so 4 points I want to get to in this particular psalm. One, darkness can last a long time, even for a believing Christian. There's no better place to learn about God's grace. There's no better place to become a stronger person. And again, darkness is relative, even if lasting for many years. So believing even in darkness, darkness can last a long time as a Christian. You know, there is certainly a part of the gospel message that is preached that, and I think Jeff has touched on this, and maybe Matt has touched on this, that you become a Christian and everything's going to be great. That's not in the Bible. That is not in the Bible. For those of you who don't know, by day, I'm a software programmer, so I put a little coding up here. So that says good behavior not equal to happiness. Right? So exclamation mark equals just a a coding symbol for that. Our good behavior toward God, our obedience to God, doesn't necessarily mean we're going to be happy. We're not going to have disease. We're not going to have bad things happen to us. That's not how things operate. And I don't necessarily can give you an answer why that's true, but we do know that that is true. Look at Jesus. You had a perfect man who was beaten and tortured and alienated by everyone he knew, his family and his closest companions. So obviously, good behavior does not equal happiness and no pain in this earth. Rains on the just and the unjust. Almost the whole book of Ecclesiastes, right? Now, there is an outer darkness, and we see it with this, the writer of the psalm, who we are going to talk about who wrote it, by the way. But there's an outer darkness. So those are the forces on the outside, right? Maybe it's some physical ailment. It's people who abuse us or something we're facing externally for inner war. Or it could be, as James was talking about, this inner darkness, you know, the place that no one else really knows about. Only you, when you're by yourself, or when you feel alone, that darkness that you battle, depression or addiction or whatever it may be. You know, some other places that we find, you know, caretaking. Both my mom and Adam and Megan's mom are caretakers and have been for many, many years, and as long as our fathers are around, we'll continue to be caretakers, and it's been 6, 7, 8 years. So, and many of you have been caretakers and are caretakers now, and that's not a short-term thing. There was a friend of mine in high school. Her sister contracted a terrible disease when she was in fifth grade, and she lived until she was in her mid-20s, but she was completely bedridden. You had to pick her up from the couch and take her to a bed. So there obviously are things like that, physical disease, handicaps. But why is this in the Bible? And maybe it's because the Bible is real. This has happened. This, you know, the Bible doesn't have anything to sell us. It's not trying to win us over to, it's just a feel-good story. You come to church and it's all going to be great, right? We can certainly draw our strength from this. We're not pawns in the game.
We have a chance to follow him and do it.
Right.
And if we don't, those are the things that are out there.
Yeah.
God knows those things just like the creative resistance. And if understand that he created something evil.
Well, sin is in the world. Right? If we were to go back to the Garden of Eden, I don't think we would find disease. I don't think we would find anything. I don't even know that things died. I mean, you had the Tree of Life there. Things could live forever. I think that was the plan. Well, we can't. But when sin entered the world, so did death and decay. And it's not relative based on how you act is the point. And it may be a short term thing.
Right?
Well, sure. Yeah, but that's sometimes they're not. Which comes back to, why do we have this psalm? Because this guy's dealing with the same thing that we're talking about right now. Right? I mean, he's obviously upset at God. Jeremiah Denton, and this is just an example of how things can last, darkness can last for a long time. Jeremiah Denton was born, well, I won't go through his whole history. He was a POW in Vietnam. He was held prisoner of war for almost 8 years, four of which were spent in solitary confinement. His solitary confinement was in a 3x9 box. 3 foot by 9 foot, he spent 4 years in that box. He went on to become a senator of the United States, a U.S. senator representing the state of Alabama for 6 years. On February 12th, 1973, by the way, he's written a book. We have it on a bookshelf. If you want to borrow it sometime, it's a great read, Jeremiah Denton. On February 12th, 1973, both Denton and some other members were released by Hanoi, by the North Vietnamese, along with numerous other American POWs during Operation Homecoming. Now remember, he's been in POW camp for 8 years, four of those solitary confinement. He gets off the plane here in the States, and this is what he says. "We are honored to have had the opportunity to serve our country under difficult circumstances. We are profoundly grateful to our Commander-in-Chief and to the nation for this day. God bless America." Does that sound familiar to what we're told to do when we are in diverse circumstances? We're told to count it all joy. Jeremiah Denton was a Christian. He was a believer. You may have heard me tell this story before, that they used Morse code to communicate Bible passages to one another while they were in prison during that 8 years, and that's how he survived. I want to show you another short video. This was a propaganda video. He's been interviewed by one of the Vietnamese here that was broadcast across the world. But pay attention to his eyes.
But whatever the position of my government is, I support it fully. Mm-hmm. Whatever the position of my government is, I believe in it. Yes, sir. I am a member of that government.
I know you can't hear that. He says, "Yes, sir, I support my government. Whatever the position is, I fully support it." With his eyes, he's Morse code to those who are watching the word torture. And he did that 10 or 12 times. The word torture, because he wanted those who were watching to know that they were being tortured. The purpose of this video was to say they weren't being tortured. But 8 years. 8 years. And there are many other stories. I'm sure many of you have great stories. But just one small story. What's the character's name? Jane. There is a series of books called Call of the Midwife. And it goes through the history of midwifery. Is that proper? Okay. Anyway, it's interesting, certainly. It's phenomenal what those ladies did many years ago when wives or women weren't allowed to do a lot of things. But really, really neat. And there's a book series on it. But one of the offshoots of that is about the workhouses in England during that time. And one of the young girls that is in the workhouses, and they were taken very young, like Jackson, Brooklyn age, to go into these workhouses. And one of the characters in the book, well, she's not a character, she's a real-life person. Her name is Jane, and she worked in these workhouses. She didn't have a father, but she had kind of psychologically adopted one of the owners of the workhouse as her grandfather. And, you know, one day he's going to take her to the beach and, you know, adopt her and just, you know, get her out of this situation. And her fantasy about this goes on for many, many years. And I don't know how old she is when she's 8. So at 8 years old, this guy actually comes. You know, he's been talked about and built up, and he finally comes to the workhouse to visit. And she runs up and gives him a hug, which was not allowed to be done. So when he leaves, the owner of the workhouse takes her and does lots of bad things to this young girl, this 8-year-old girl. And for the rest of her life, she was basically a mute, didn't talk, was just psychologically spent. And the lady who wrote the series of books met Jane later in life and was like, why? You know, she doesn't want anybody to touch her, she won't already talk, you know, what's going on? And it was all because of this episode, and this has endured, you know, for her life. The point of that is, awful story. Awful things that happened to POWs, awful things that have happened to probably many people that you know. And I know that those stories go on, and you guys know of people, not just in books, but in your own homes. Darkness can last a long time. And that's the point. Darkness can last a long time. And we've all been told that, you know, everything's going to be fine. You know, life is good and you're a Christian. And we've kind of sold that, right? Let's watch this little clip here. You may recognize the movie. Anyone who says differently is selling something. Life is pain. Anyone who says differently is selling something. Think about that. Now, this is a comical movie, The Prince's Bride, if you've ever seen it. But the point is, you know, she's saying, you're mocking my pain. And he's like, look, this is real. I think that's why Psalm 8 is here. This is real. This guy is dealing with this. You have had to deal with something in your life that it's like, why am I having to go through this? Right? What did the baby do to deserve to be born with cancer? You can't give any explanation for that. Right? That is life. That is the way life is. Now, talk about why would God allow that to happen. We'll have to have a whole other hour to talk about that. But let's focus on a couple of things. Obviously, we couldn't do a lesson like this without talking about Job. So we'll just stick to one of these for time's sake. Job 14 and 1. Remember the point, darkness can last for a long time. And if we don't believe that, then someone is trying to sell us something. Job 14, 1. Man who is born of woman is short-lived and full of turmoil. It's a fact. That's the way it is. Some people are going to have really bad lives. Some people, not so bad. Some people are going to be in prison in solitary confinement for 4 years. Some people are not. But here's the thing. Here's what we're sold sometimes. If you just become a Christian, all these things will go away. And people who say that, man, they're doing such a disservice. Takes you back to that place.
So I am my own worst trouble for my life because the darkness.
That's that inner darkness, yeah. Here's one thing I would say about Psalm 88. Is I think it gives us an idea it sets expectations that this guy was dealing with this. It's normal. It's normal for us to ask these questions. That's okay. I'm not going to say it's okay for you to stay in that state, and we're going to talk about where this person who wrote this song ended up. But I think that's why God has it here. He is merciful. There are expectations that are set properly, not unrealistic, that your life is going to be good. Hey, if you come and you get dunked in the water, man, life is good. No more pain after that. That's not what we're told. And that's the point. I'm probably belabored enough. Mm-hmm. Sure. You can choose happiness. That's right. Well, there is a difference, right? There are bad choices you make that you will suffer consequences from. But there are other choices you make that are the things that happen to you that aren't due to a bad choice, a disease you've contracted, or being in prison, you know, in solitary confinement, or those things weren't due to a bad choice necessarily. So there's certainly both sides of that. Okay, second point. There's no better place to learn about God's grace than in a dark place. And you see that here. I mean, he is interrogating God, right? He says, verses 10 through 12, what are you going to do? If you kill me, who's going to are you going to perform these wonders for the dead? You know, are the departed spirits going to rise up and praise you? I mean, he's very rhetorical, you know, very brazen to be speaking to the creator of the universe, everything we know of this way, but he is. He's like, I want to do all these things for you, but you're not letting me. And he does exaggerate his circumstances a little bit. And the reason I say this, he mentions this a couple times, from my youth, I have been this way. And we know that's not true, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But he says, always, you never. It's every time. My wife calls these the superlatives, and whenever I put out one of those, you know, we get into... by the way, if you haven't signed up for the Dynamic Marriage class, next time you should. So during that class, one of the things that come up were, you know, when you get into discussions and using superlatives like you never or you always. And we do this with our children, you know. Jackson will say something like that. You have to be careful about those things, right? Those are realistic. And that's how this felt, you know. Well, I don't have it right off. I thought it, but he talks about being there from his youth, and from when he was a young person. At the very end, he says, "Darkness is my closest friend." You know, I just as soon have darkness than you, God. In Psalm 39, the other one that's very similar to this, it ends. Listen to this. This is unnerving, but it's real. These are in the Bible. This is David, and David says this to God. He says, God, turn your gaze away from me. Turn your gaze away from me that I might smile again for just a little while. Stop looking at me, God. I just want to have a little reprieve. Look away from me. And that's the way that psalm is. What's the last word in the New American Standard, Psalm 88? What's the very last word in this psalm? Darkness. Darkness.
He's the one who's listening to all of that, and he's realizing it. Baton Rouge was a few days after a big rally of God showing down with the oil prophet and his in the corner saying, I'm the only one left. And Jonah refusing the very mercy that is given to him was refusing that mercy being shown on Nineveh. So we see it time and time again, his shoulders are that big, and I really see that where that joy comes in.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think Jonah was not a story I even thought about. Obviously, you go to Job at times like this, but others, this Psalm 88, you know, why are these in the Bible? Well, ultimately, again, you're seeing that the Bible is real. It's not trying to sell you something that's untrue. And God is a God of grace, and he will continue to hold on to you. If any of you, a lot of you have children, if your child comes to you and they're upset and they're mad and they're fussing with you, you're not going to abandon them. You may discipline them if that's what they need, but you're not going to abandon them. And there's so many life lessons in that, and that's a great, great mental image. All right, we need to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's right. Yeah. This is a quote from Derek Kidner. He says, the very presence of these prayers in the Bible, and he's specifically referring to Psalm 39 and Psalm 88, the very presence of these prayers in the Bible is a witness of God's understanding. God knows how men speak when they are desperate. I know how Brooklyn's going to react when she's in trouble. So imagine God, I put this in quotes since he hasn't said this, this is Jeff. I am the God of this man, even though he is talking to me this way. I think that's why it's in the Bible. God is saying, I am a God of Heman, which is the author of this psalm, even though he's talking this way. Jeff? I knew that word was going to come up soon. It's all pride, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's a great application. Great application. All right, let me try to get to the last 2 points here. There's no better place to become a person of greatness except when you're going through darkness. Obviously, the writer of this, he hasn't said a lot of right things, right? I mean, none of this that he is saying are probably things that we would think of to say as good things to say to God. But, who is he saying them to? I heard someone say this, and I'm sure many of you can relate, that, you know, in relationships, parent-child or husband-wife, you get in a heated argument and you're so mad at each other. But ultimately, that's better than being indifferent, right? If you just walk away and whatever, then that's kind of a situation where. So he's upset, but he's saying it to God, Kevin.
Thank you.
Right. Have you for a second? You read my slides. Matthew 27. He absolutely did. That's right. Get with him. Everything's going to be all right. Yeah, man. All right, last point. All right, yeah, obviously we have to get to Job, and we're not going to have time, but just a couple of things. What does Satan say when he goes to Job? Job only loves you because why? He only loves you because you blessed him. Right? And God says, he's yours. Do what you want to. He took everything away. So, transactional relationship. Is that what we have? If we do, it's superficial, right? God, I will love you. I will serve you. I will do whatever you want. Yes. If. Right? Maybe we don't say the if. But when we lose a leg, when we get in that dark place, because our addiction comes back, when we're in solitary confinement, we're like, where are you now? That's the transactional relationship that we find ourselves in, right? What have you done for me today? And that's where Job found himself, and Job is very real with it either. My brother is a pseudo-atheist because of this very reason today. His career didn't turn out the way he wanted. He didn't get the job he wanted. He prayed to God. He got sick with some other physical ailments. So he said, either God's not who we think we are, or he's something completely different than I've ever been taught, or he just doesn't exist at all. And that's because my brother grew up thinking God is a transactional relationship. If I pray to you, then I should get this. And he's in a really sad spot because of that. So, why is God not answering me? Hey, he asked the same question, but just keep asking. Don't give up. Keep asking. You're leaving any in darkness. So let me get to this last point. Darkness can be relative, and this is where I want to get to the author of this psalm. Heman wrote Psalm 88. Who was Heman? Turn to 1 Chronicles. Chapter 6. We don't know a whole lot about him. 1 Chronicles chapter 6, verse 31 through 33. Now these are those whom David appointed over the service of the song in the house of the Lord after the ark rested there. They ministered with song before the tabernacle of the tent of meetings until Solomon had built the house of the Lord in Jerusalem, and they served in their office. These are those who served with their sons. From the sons of the Kehathites were Heman, the singer. We can continue on. One of the most well-known set of poetry and psalms in the entire world are the psalms that are in the Bible, whether you're Christian or not. One of the most influential. One of the most greatest literary works in all of history. So even though he wrote, I'll get to you in a minute. Even though he wrote and felt this way in Psalm 88, from Psalm 42 to around Psalm 90 or 89 were psalms that Heman and those other three men around him wrote. So in this life of suffering that he had, whatever he was dealing with, we now have Psalm 42 through 89 because of that. And I guarantee it was influenced because of that. Great passage to end on. Our time is up. Thank you.